Correct. And a very happy Sunday, September 28th, 2025, to everybody. This is Chase with the USC Hoops College Basketball Podcast, USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast, doing another special podcast focusing on football. And for that, I have Upper West Side Trojan with me. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing this morning?
Good, good.
Okay, well, we're doing this kind of like quick turnaround podcast because USC suffered its first loss of the season. And Upper West and I and Nick had all done a podcast back in August where we kind of like just went through, picked all the games for the season. I know I had actually picked us to lose this game. Did you pick us to lose too? I can't remember how what your formal pick was on that.
I went back and forth all week, and then 10 minutes before the game, I was here with another buddy watching the game, and I said, I just thought about everything, and I had 35-31 Illinois. I didn't want to because I'm hyped up on USC. I want them to be better. But I just went with it. I don't know. So I was pretty close with the score this time. I haven't been close every game, but this one I think I was on point. I just thought we weren't going to quite do it.
Yeah, and the people who picked on the peristyle, the game, including myself, all picked. It was all within a range of 2 to 4 points. Every single person, we were right there. That was the final result. Okay, so let's just, what's your, just headline takeaways from the game for yourself?
I don't know if I'd say like more of the same. I'm reading that on the peristyle constantly, and some people are all completely doom and gloom, and then other people are like, look at the positive, we're getting better. It was somewhat more of the same. I do think also Illinois is a much better team than they showed against Indiana. I don't think they were as good as preseason pundits might have said they were. I think I preseason ranked them about 19 or 20, and I think that's about how good they are. I think they're a good team for sure. And when they're at home, of course, maybe they are the 10th or 15th best team in the country. When they're on the road, maybe they're the 30th best team. There's a difference. I'm big on the home and away thing. The game itself is what I've seen, out of Lincoln Riley teams, at least at USC and even at Oklahoma. I've seen this for a long time, which is lack of defense. So whoever the defensive coordinator he's had, whether it be at Oklahoma, he had two people there, and we know we had Grinch coming on board with us as well. And then Lynn, I'm not saying Lynn is a terrible DC at all. I would say that I don't exactly know. If you remember when Lynn came on board, I said that he might be a slightly above average OC. He might be Vince Lombardi. I don't really know because UCLA's schedule that year, they didn't play a lot of good offenses. But I do think Lynn is probably pretty good. But my belief is that the whole team takes on the personality of the head coach. And so you go as your head coach goes. If you have a general in the army and he's not a great general, but a lot of the troops are great, or some of your leaders are pretty good, but your overall leader isn't great, then you might still not perform well in battle. That's a belief I have. But what did I see yesterday? I saw a defense that couldn't stop the run or the pass, and also couldn't get pressure on the quarterback. And why? Why? Well, some of it was just, maybe poor calls by the defense, but also just lack of physicality, fundamental play, open field tackling, shedding blocks, and all the other things that I probably harp on more than anybody else. So that's kind of what I saw.
So, for me, even though I did not think we were going to win, I did hold out hope that we may turn the corner. Now, look, I did a very public post on the peristyle last week because I actually went to the game against Michigan State and watched the combination of mental errors between the special teams and the defense just essentially hand 14 points to Michigan State to bring them back into a game that was basically had been otherwise would have been decided. Luckily, the offense performed well enough in that game that we just were able to kind of just, in a sense, I mean, continue to hold the ball, score, run the clock out. But there was, major red flags in that game. There have been some red flags in the Purdue game and earlier games. But, yesterday, I have to say, I don't, based upon what I saw yesterday, I don't see any indication that there has been any improvement on the defense from last year at all. I mean, especially on the road. I know we did beat Purdue. We didn't, that was a game maybe we lose last season for a variety of reasons. I think Maeva has been better this season, and the combination of the pass blocking and Maeva has been better this season, and overall the running game has been probably better, that you're able to beat a, win a game like Purdue by a couple touchdowns a game we probably would have lost last year. But the defense potential, it could be worse than it was last year. I mean, that's kind of a scary thought. For me, there's going to be more difficult games going forward. I maybe some guys get healthy, but from what I saw yesterday's defensive performance was about as bad as it gets. And maybe I think you had gone through some of the numbers on that, right? To compare to recent offensive performances under Bielema that Illinois has had.
Yeah, I did. I spent a lot of time quoting a lot of stats on the peristyle. Some people like the stats, some people don't care, but the stats do tell you a lot of the story. And I wanted to see, because I don't consider Illinois a super high-powered offense. I mean, I think Bielema is definitely a good coach. I don't know if he's a great coach, but I'd say he's definitely a good coach. He's had a track record. He did very well at Wisconsin. He was kind of up and down, but not too many coaches win at Arkansas. I don't know if you can really win at Arkansas. And he's, built sort of Illinois up to a good program. So I wanted to see, like, does he really put up 500 yards that offense that often? And that's a really good barometer for having why we had a great day on offense. We had 500 yards. That usually yards do lead to points. Of course, it's nice if you can somehow. Give up 500 yards and hold a team only to 34. There's usually a little bit of luck in that, in my opinion, but it will come to roost, and it was enough to carry them to the victory. But I don't like it when teams march the ball on USC because then Lincoln can't get the ball back. So I wanted to see how often do they put up 500 yards, or where were we at? And so the statistic was relatively alarming, maybe not quite as bad as I initially thought. But I looked it up since Bielema's been there. He's been there 5 years, call it four and a half, I guess, when you include this year. This is his fifth year there. They had given up a few years ago. They did give up 502 yards to Chattanooga, which I guess that's the Chattanooga Mocs. Is that the Moccasins? I don't know what they are. Is that might be a Division I AA FCS team, or maybe they're Division II. I mean, I don't know, but that was just a very low level team. 503 was the yardage allegedly yesterday, so I think that's the stat I saw. And then they did have a couple of games in 20, so they did put up over 500 yards two other times. But it still doesn't sound promising for USC. Why? They did give up. They did not give up, but they did create 662 yards. We're talking about Illinois here against Illinois. Excuse me, against Indiana. That was the year that they fired their head coach, and they were 3-9, and they just had a terrible team. I mean, still impressive to put up 662 yards, and that was a lot more than yesterday. And then they did have one game against Purdue last year. They were at it went to overtime, hard to believe, right? Against Purdue, which was like the worst team in the country, worst team in the Big Ten. They had 556, although some of that came in overtime, obviously. Purdue was 1-11. So they have been able twice to put up massive yardage on two really, really bad teams. And then the next thing they did, and also they did have one game against a a group of five team at home. They played Florida, a bad Florida Atlantic team, and put up 5-10, but that's group of five. I don't really count that. And the Chattanooga, I don't count that either. But USC was 5-0-3. So are we just a little bit better than Purdue last year that was 1-11? No, we're probably better than them because of our offense, of course, but on defense, I don't know. So those that didn't make it. He doesn't do that every season. He did it twice against incredibly bad teams that were not talented teams either. The team 2 years ago from Indiana, very little talent, and the Purdue team last year was they won one game. Let's put it that way. That's rare. Just I don't know. Does anybody only win one game? Maybe. It's pretty rare though. So that wasn't too exciting when I saw that statistic. So
Yeah, it
anyway.
was also both games were overtime games, by the way. Even the Indiana game was an overtime game. And the maybe even as scary is the yards per play, because if you look at these other games, Chattanooga, Florida Atlantic, Purdue, all those games, Illinois is under 8 yards per play from scrimmage. Yesterday, they were 8.1 yards per play. And I think the only game in the Bielema era where they were over 8 yards per play, other than that one, was the game against Indiana, where, obviously the coach was fired. That was 9.3 yards per play. I mean, so yeah, that Indiana team had worse defense. Okay, we'll stipulate to that. But I mean, that's pretty terrifying. I mean, especially considering one of the hallmarks of this particular Bielema team at Illinois had been that the scoring was outperforming the yardage. And we saw that last season where like they outscored their opponents and they went 10 and 3, even though they were out gained in games against FBS teams. I can't remember if it was Power Conference or FBS, but they were out gained by 40 yards per game. This season, they came into the game against us being outgained by, if you exclude, I think the Western Illinois game, the FCS team, they're being outgained by 100 yards per game. Now, some of that was skewed by the Indiana result, but they had against Western Michigan, which is a MAC team, they gained 358 yards in that game. And against Duke, which everyone kind of watched, they only gained 419 yards in that game. And they obviously, I mean, this is something you had already pointed out, but the pressures, they gave up major pressures to Duke and to, I mean, Indiana just killed them with pressure, and we got like our defense got zero pressure basically.
Yeah, we had the one sack. I mean, that's one other thing, Chase, that I've noticed as well is that we do sometimes have decent performances here and there, but it usually comes in the form of sort of out scheming, like a really creative blitz package or something like that, or one guy shooting through a gap. I don't see it coming in the form of really shedding a block and just physically beating your man. Sometimes maybe with speed you can physically beat a man, especially a really weak opponent. We've done that. But I don't see like head to head when you're going and the blocking is good and the defense is good, us pushing the lines back on either side of the ball that often. This year you just mentioned it too. They put up 440 against Western Illinois, 419 against Duke. Not bad, actually. You're playing Duke on the road, but is Duke a powerhouse? I don't know. Not exactly. 358 against Western Michigan, 161 at Indiana. That's a better barometer. I think they're better than 161. That game got away from them. I mean, they have enough wins, and Bielema has enough wins in his career to say that he's better than 161 yards, and he's good enough at offense for sure. And then wow, the next week they come back. The game was on the line for them to prove that they are a decent team, and that was just a fluke. And they went for 504, and it was really nice. Like I'd have been very happy if I were in their shoes on offense, because I would have said, wow, you ran the ball consistently, getting 2 to 10 yards like every carry. Not many tackles for losses. They're opening up with getting 5 and 8 yards a lot of times on first and second down. So, opening up third down for maybe third and short really often. And then when we maybe showed that we're going to stop the run a little bit more, They found lots of holes in the zone. I was surprised at how many big holes there were in the zone. There seemed like there was a lot of guys in coverage. Joel Klatt kept mentioning, why is USC not crowding the box a little bit more? But even with a lot of players sitting in coverage, there were still a lot of holes in the zone. So that was some good scheme on their part or some weak defense on our part. Maybe we were just not, guys were out of place. People are talking about young defensive backs or the team has no talent. The talent issue is not true. There's just too many good players on defense that were wanted by too many good teams, too many good, too great teams across the country in high school or out of the portal to say that it's a bad defense. And if you look at so many other three-star programs that have players that have offers from regular three-star programs who do better on defense, just stop it. Stop it with the whole talent thing. I mean, they brought in all these linemen and they're all these, I don't know how many, I think there's like 44 stars on the team. You should be able to put together a team, and there's some 5 stars as well. And lots of guys that were wanted by lots of good programs. Not a roster that's an Alabama, a Georgia, or OSU, but one below that, a notch below that, So maybe not even quite as good as Penn State, no doubt, but a roster that's better than Illinois, 100% better. I looked at Illinois. I did not like their talent at all. What I did love about them is their continuity. They were the most experienced team. They are the most experienced team in the country as far as total career starts by their players. It kind of showed yesterday. I didn't think their quarterback was that great. He missed some throws too, where the guys were open. He didn't look draftable to me yesterday, but he got the job done and he put up a lot of yardage. So he made himself look like a pro, maybe in some ways. So I'm not sure where USC goes from here, but those are some of my thoughts.
Yeah, just very briefly on the Pro Football Focus ratings. According to them, we only got seven total pressures. They define that as the sum of sacks, hits, hurries. Seven total pressures. One of those was from that corner blitz from DeCarlos Nicholson, which is our only sack in the game. So, if you're looking other than the cornerback on a blitz, six basically total. Fountain had one. He had a hit on the quarterback. Devin Tompkins. I mean, this is not a good stat. He was on the field for 25 pass plays, rushed the quarterback 24 times, and had one hurry. That's it. No hits on the quarterback, no sacks.
Yeah.
Bukar was a little bit better. He actually was only on the field for four plays and actually had one hit and one hurry. So maybe get him on the field a little more on those pass situations. Gentry had a couple hurries, but nothing from Shelby, zero. Nothing from Lucas, zero. That's very worrying statistic, quite frankly. Obviously the secondary is struggling in coverage, but you do need some help from the defense pass rush. We didn't provide that at all. Looking at this coverage stuff, this is where it gets, it gets kind of rough. The way PFF does it. I mean, they do have all 22, I believe, video to look at the entire field and evaluate. Conley just, I mean, his I don't even want to read the scoring, but it was really, really poor. Nicholson, not particularly strong, well below what even like the baseline average of what you'd like to see. And Marcellus Williams was closer to the baseline, so that's kind of surprising. Longstreet on his numbers weren't as bad. I think we got him out of the game early though because it looked like he was being picked on. One of the players who actually played a bit yesterday is Riddick, Kendarius Riddick, who I think looked better by the eyeball. His PFF scores were not good, but it would be interesting to see if he's now maybe potentially going to be taking that nickel spot. Well, I guess we'll just have to see about that. Look, I mean, obviously not having Kamari Ramsey, it did impact the defense, but man, I think, what was the final here that looking at the numbers, Illinois threw for Altmaier threw for almost 12 yards per pass attempt. I mean, he only threw the ball 26 times and had 328 yards. I mean, that's
And yards after catch wasn't so good either. They were wide open in the zone and e either just open to get a few more yards and or breaking some tackles. The tackling wasn't very good in the open field. I saw a fair amount of loss contain. I saw several times where the defense did play well. The defensive line, to a certain degree, they'd slant in a direction, got right in the backfield, and the running back would cut back the other way. Not that much, but I saw it enough. And and then so that's where you're losing your lane and you're losing your, you've got to hold your contain. I was watching, I think it was either Ohio, I think I watched both the Ohio State game and I watched the Oregon PSU game. And I was like, wow, Ohio State was so fundamentally sound when they were rushing. They weren't getting that many sacks at all in the QB. They were literally just consistently bull rushing their guys, pushing them back into the QB and making him throw like on time for sure, maybe a little faster than he wanted to, and never, or not never, but rarely letting him ever get outside. There was nowhere for the guy to run. He just, it was textbook where you've got to be patient. You're getting no sacks, but you're still winning the game. But I could see what they were doing. They were not going to let a guy who's a speed guy, who at quarterback at Washington, get to the outside, where we do see that. And so I always harp on this whole thing about fundamental play, and I don't see it that much with USC. The lack of contain, I mean, these are things you're taught. When you're a Fountain showed some athleticism on a few plays, looked like he was in to make some great plays, and then lost contain. And you are taught to not let someone get outside of you. He might get by you, but he will never get outside of you because you might be the last line of defense. And he was probably on some plays, and the quarterback or other players got to his outside. So, and then in the open field, I did see lack of tackling, lack of fundamentals in terms of shedding blocks and all those kinds of things as well. I do see that on the offense sometimes as well. But it is interesting with the Lincoln Riley team. Most people would say, well, we might have lost. We did have the center go down, which hurts, although we had a very experienced guy going in there, which is interesting. And then losing a left tackle is huge. Two linemen, you can lose the game because of that. But isn't it interesting? Lincoln Riley, I would say he doesn't care, or it doesn't matter with Lincoln Riley. Give him FCS players and he'll still score 30. What I'm saying is Lincoln Riley can score. He figures out ways through his schemes and he scores. He doesn't necessarily need the top players in the country to score. He's has one really dynamic guy on the outside this year. He does have a very good running back who's a really well-rounded back. So those things are definitely kept keeping us afloat, but he scores. So it didn't really matter to Riley, in my opinion. I'm giving him the credit. The team did the work, but he still really moved the ball really well. We also had 500 yards on, was it? It was either 500 or 498 or whatever. I think we
Yeah,
hit the 500 mark or
490. Yeah,
499,
490.
490 even. Yeah, maybe the, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that, of course, and that does not include the whatever 70-yard touchdown pass that got called back because our substitute center decided to drift down the field an extra 3 yards.
Yeah, cheap call, a little bit cheap, right?
A little bit cheap, but look, the rules are the rules, and you can't do that. It's another mental error, and that's something I've been harping on is like so many mental errors on this team. Normally, it's not coming from the offense this season. Normally, it's coming from special teams and the defense, but that was just a mental error that cost us. I mean, I entered the game in the kind of that fumble, and I was like, gosh, we are. It's something I saw during Michigan State and Purdue as well. I mean, we are just our own worst enemy so often. Now, as the game went on, Illinois just beat us. I mean, on far as their offense versus our defense, they were just beating us physically. So I couldn't, you can't chalk that up after at some point in time, they were just better than us. It wasn't a matter of mental errors that were dominating. Obviously, though, a lot of, we're, poor technique, poor coverage, all that stuff. Looking at the run defense grades from the game, this is where it gets, you really want a guy, like Stevens to have like a super high run defense grade because he's your middle linebacker, and he's having like much better pass coverage grades, but his run defensive grade is well below the baseline. I mean, well below. That's not a good sign. Lucas really struggled, man. He also below there. Tompkins struggled. We really are getting, it's basically Gentry and the safeties that are giving us a lot of run support. That's a little nerve-wracking. Jane Walker, I guess, only was in on four run plays from Illinois. Tamir Robinson was only in on two. I guess that's something to take a look at going forward. I mean, Stevens has, I mean, look, he's getting drawing a lot of criticism online. His pass coverage numbers look strong, which, and that's important because you can't like leave if you're a middle linebacker and you have like an assignment to guard to cover a running back, you can't just leave him wide open, right? That's gonna be like could be a touchdown. So pass coverage is important, but you really need your middle linebacker not to be this far. I mean, his so the baseline score like for PFF is 60. He's at 53.8 for that game. I mean, that's pretty bad. You're well below that baseline. You really want a number at least in the 70s. We had nobody above 80 hit that hit 80. I mean, so that's
Who played the best yesterday in court, according to PFF, on defense or offense?
well, on run defense, it was Gentry, and followed by Christian Pierce. That's on run defense. On overall defense, Tamir Robinson played five snaps. He was number one. But after Tamir Robinson, it was Stevens, and that was strictly because of how his pass coverage grades are. And his tackle, he didn't miss as many tackles this game. I guess maybe he just didn't get to guys. That's why he was getting blocked and he didn't, his tackling grade. So like his tackling grade was not as bad, but but from guys that were like starters, there's not really a lot of good scores. Gentry had a good score, but he struggled in coverage and pass rush, which brought his scoring down. So yeah, not a lot of really not a lot of good numbers. At the bottom, you're just looking, Conley, Harvey, those guys are really at the bottom of the tier. And then Shelby had a very poor game overall, 45 score. That's really bad. Keyshawn Silver, we gave him 21 snaps yesterday. He was below 40. I mean, he's like a fifth-year senior who was originally a five-star recruit. I mean,
Number
he's
two defensive tackle in the country. I think it was maybe number one on another thing. And one, but that doesn't prove anything. You still have to go to
No,
college.
absolutely,
I'm,
absolutely.
you know, Chase, I made a note of this, and not to say that all players can be good players, maybe not great players, but they can all be good if they work hard for a long period of time. The one thing I said about bringing in those guys as transfers, including Jarrett, I didn't think they were terrible players or anything like that, but neither of them had, a lot of the transfers hadn't really made an all-conference team, even like an honorable mention, which is like third or fourth team all-conference anywhere else. So, there was a few, I do think some of them were pretty good, and I think those players are okay. And like again, I do think we have enough good players because I don't think to have a good defense, you don't need, I just use the word three, four, and five star, but and people know kind of what they think of when they hear the word what a four star level player or a five star is. Five star is more like a first round type of player. Four stars a guy maybe who can make the pros and is going to be a really good college player. And a three stars, you're sort of average player. Even if you have all three stars in your defense, there are plenty of defenses that are just known for defense, and they do pretty well, especially they do well against the run because they're not as sophisticated and they're not as talented and they can't cover the pass, but they can stop the run. So, we have enough recruits to be able to get it done. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts also on the penalties because that to me is this thing coming back to fundamentals. Part of that is being disciplined and not, you're gonna, if you play really hard and you are super physical, you're going to get some penalties. If you run complex schemes, you are going to get some penalties. I don't know where we stand in the country on penalties, but it seems like they come in bunches. We are definitely helping teams out, and they come in all forms, our penalties. They're not just false starts and they're not just defensive holding. Lots of pass interference. So the fundamental play of the D-backs is bad. But I mean, that's maybe like the worst thing on the entire team. But I'm seeing penalties come from a lot of different things. What do you think of the penalties, and what is it a sign of? Not just, hey, can you clean up the penalties? Maybe there's something that's behind that. Seems like we always get a lot of penalties. Am I wrong about this? I don't know our statistics on penalties under Riley at all. I just know that it seems like, for my taste, we get too many. More than 50 yards a game in penalties to me is just too much. That's my own barometer. And we always seem to get more than 50. And a
Well,
lot of times we get 100.
so you've got Mississippi State, you've got SMU, you've got UCLA, you've got Texas Tech. Those are the only four teams in the power conferences that are worse than USC in penalty yards per game.
Wow.
And now look, it was pointed out that during the Helton era, we were potentially worse. We actually, I think there was like a 5 year period at the last 5 years of the Helton era where we were either last or second to last every single season in the Pac-12 in the amount number of penalties, that your penalty yardage or however you're measuring penalties. What's particularly concerning with this USC team to me is so many of the penalties have come in key situations, particularly when the defense or special teams are trying to get off the field. Not all of them. And we didn't see as much of that yesterday. In fact, probably the biggest penalty of the game was the Jontre Reed drifting down the field penalty. To me, our penalties are, we've had like five defensive linemen hands to the face penalties. That seems to be a technique issue to me. Poor technique being used, or if, not proper fundamental technique being used. We are obviously getting, there was a key offsides penalty yesterday, that then followed by a pass interference on the same sequence by Nicholson. And then the pass interference was a little bit of a BS call, but we were blatantly offsides, and that would have given Illinois a first down anyway. So that was another penalty for a first down. We were not as bad when it comes to penalties last season. I think we were right at 51 yards per game. So it's not something that we saw last season. And then the season before, we were not good. I mean, we committed seven penalties a game, only for it seemed to be like a lot of kind of motion penalties, technical penalties, because we were only giving, we're losing like 65 yards per game. Whereas like this season, we're losing close to 80 yards a game on penalties, which is, it means a lot of pass interference or personal fouls, stuff like that. Riley's first year or his 2022 season, we were at 58 yard penalties. So like we've never been good. But we've never been this bad. And yeah, it's looked to me, it's looked really bad. They're coming in key situ they're coming in key situations. I will also say that the one thing on offense which really has not clicked when it comes to like penalties potentially is Riley doing late substitutions occasionally, which other teams are taking advantage of, which has drawn a couple delay of game penalties and has also caused some like motion penalties, and those tend to disproportionately happen on like critical downs, like in the goal line area. We basically would have had one yesterday. The refs kind of gave us a break, let it go like a beat after the clock ran. Now, look, this is a rule that I think is completely BS, that the officials now are being told to allow defenses to spend 15 to 25 seconds substituting in reaction to an offensive substitution. I mean, you should be able to substitute new personnel on and off the field within 8 seconds, if not less. But I would say maybe maximum 10 seconds. They need to have a clock on how long that substitute, the decision of
Agreed
what.
on that. Agreed. Yes.
But you can't can't give them all the time in the world. So I mean, look, in the old days, remember when we had the 25-second clock, offenses could run in entirely new personnel groupings and defenses just had to adjust. It was only because Chip Kelly started doing the on the fly substitutions with no huddling, that this rule has been implemented. The way I might do it is if the offensive team huddles after substituting, then the defense has no, they don't get any extra time. Because that would have gone back to the old rule, right? If you hut in the old days, everyone huddled between snaps. So the idea was once you're huddling, the defense does not need extra time to get substitutions on the field. So I would say, if the offense doesn't, if the offense actually huddles after a substitution, they should be able to, the defense should not get extra time. What do you think about that?
That's a good way to do it. I mean, anything is better than what they have now because teams are doing, I've seen this across the board. Teams around the country are doing this, and they're when they're looking for that opportunity, they're like getting their guys to loaf on and off the field. So, we're seeing that all the time, and it's causing maybe even some losses. The way I would do it is there's a 40-second clock. I would just set a limit. Like when you want to substitute on offense, you get 12 or 15 seconds, and then the defense gets 12 or I'm just making the numbers up. I'd have to think about it. 12 or 15 seconds. So automatically, everybody's got to be on the field with 10 seconds or 12 seconds to go on the play clock. Then you no more substituting by anybody. You have to, you just got to pick your guys to get on the field. You can't spend time thinking about it for an hour. You got to get them on the field, and then you have 10 seconds to snap. You can even change the play quickly within 5 seconds and snap the ball. So, it gives the offense time to do what they need to do and not have to snap the ball like, when they're not ready to, or take a delay. So I would set a limit, like, and especially more to the defense, like, listen, defense, you just can't loaf on and off the field. You've got to get on. So if you don't, you get a penalty for like ha lollygagging and waiting, and they're doing that on purpose. I saw a couple times yesterday where it was 100% on purpose the way the guys were running on and off the field. It was noticeable, and I believe because Lincoln did substitute a little later, and then they drew it out, and then they gave us that extra second. I saw the thing hit zero, and then it was like the next second, and they didn't do it. I mean, I like the refs that they cut us a break. Because we deserved it. So I thought it was fair the way they did it. And it didn't really hurt us in that game too much. So that's what you do. One way or another, you just can't allow this kind of thing. Your idea with the huddle, that could work as well. Just change the rule somehow and make it so defenses can't cheat. Dan Lanning even told the media, he didn't say the word cheat, but he said, oh, yeah, I cheated on purpose, even though it is cheating to me to like purposely not let the other team snap the ball, in a way. And that's what cost them the game against the Ohio State. They probably would have lost that game, but Ohio State ran out of time. And Lanning said, like, oh, yeah, we did that twice in a row. It worked really well, didn't it? You remember that press
Oh,
conference?
yeah.
And he flat out, Dan Lanning's incredible. When he went against Mike Gundy, and now Gundy's gone from Oklahoma State, he said, well, they spend $40 million a year on their players. We spend $7 million over 4 years, or whatever the numbers were. I don't remember, but they were drastically different. He said, yeah, we buy players to win. So, I
Yeah.
mean, it doesn't make you think very highly of Oregon and the fact that they just said, yeah, we just buy our players because we buy the best players, and you should do the same. What else was he going to say, I guess? But he is winning with those players, and it's absolutely working. Go on the road and beat Penn State yesterday, which is another thing that I was looking for as well is, can you win on the road? Can you win in the fourth? Riley did his job. I will give him credit for doing a lot of good things on offense, minus some players, and even having the receivers at not at full speed. We're missing Lane. I mean, he played a little bit, but wasn't a huge factor. And he still scored a lot, or at least moved the ball a lot. A couple of turnovers and things like that didn't help. He did the job, and then Lynn had the opportunity. I mean, the other team did have a couple of minutes and they had some timeouts and they had enough time for sure. And we literally, he had a, he, this happened several times last year. Lynn, if you want to put it on Lynn or on Riley or whoever you want to put it on, he couldn't stop them. And that was the time where you could win the game, which you probably didn't deserve to win anyway. I felt Illinois really blew us out a little bit more than that. It just didn't show up in the score because they made a couple of critical mistakes themselves, but we really couldn't come through. But I have to give Maiava and all the other thing, the whole thing about, should you score quickly or not? It's not. Riley said it himself, and he was being truthful. It's hard to score. If somebody's going to give you a 12-yard pass, whatever it was, pass play, and they're going to leave it open, one up, man-on-man coverage or whatever it is, or you see a weakness, take the points. Don't run
Yeah, I
slowly.
disagree. I totally disagree.
I mean,
Look.
no, hear me out. I'm not saying
Okay.
I would have done that exactly that way because I don't trust the defense either. This is where we're unclear on this. No, I would have tried to lengthen it a little bit more, but I can't completely blame someone for scoring a touchdown when they needed to score a touchdown. So I see both points. Would I have like slowed it up a little and took some time off the clock and tried to run the ball because they were having trouble stopping us? I probably would have run more of a normal offense, and I would have bled the clock too. But if I really needed it, I'm not going to wait till like fourth down to try to score. I'm going to score somewhere in the middle there. And the defense, they have to come through as well. I mean, they did their job. They got the ball back. The fumble was caused, and then we drove the field. And man, we scored. So that game was for the taking. They blew it. Illinois, could have lost that game through some poor mistakes of their own, but they didn't. So can we win on the road against above average to good teams? Right now, no, not really. And that's a sign of a great program. If you watch the good programs yesterday, Alabama went into Georgia. They won it. They proved that, hey, we're still here. So did we saw the Oregon go into Penn State. That's a really long trip against a team that everyone thinks maybe was number one this year, Penn State. They got a super veteran team, and there are several other teams. Even Indiana played on the road at Iowa. That is a tough place to play. Coming off that victory, that's looking like a trap game loss, and they came through and won. They won by 5. They got the victory, no matter what anyone would say about the score or if Iowa is terrible or not. They're not. They're well coached, Iowa. So, and I saw several games like that. Teams came through. So we've got to learn to do that too. And this is Illinois. The other thing is, I'd love to hear your ideas on what do you think of the schedule coming up? I don't. No team scares me personally, but they scare me with our team. And Michigan does scare me. Absolutely, they do. So does Notre Dame. I watched Nebraska play, and I thought they were improved over last year. No matter what anyone else might say about that. Northwestern, no, they don't scare me, especially at home. Iowa at home doesn't scare me as much either, but they're still a physical team, so I'll pay attention to Iowa. At Oregon, absolutely is a problem. UCLA is not much of a problem, but rivalry games, you absolutely never know. We'll win against UCLA, of course, but it's a rivalry game. Things do happen, so that's you still have to watch out for that game as well. So that's a really tough schedule against some teams, and some of those are on the road, and the teams are really good as well. Notre Dame is starting to get better. Their quarterback's maturing. So, any thoughts on the future schedule? We haven't really played very many good teams so far. Illinois is a good team, I think, pretty good. But your thoughts on like the future schedule, because this is a little scary.
Well, let me talk about the time. Let me talk about the clock usage first. So the way to think about this is, so we had the ball on Illinois' 16-yard line, 1:55 to go. We had 3 timeouts. Illinois had 3 timeouts. We're down by 6 points. We had just run essentially at that point about 10 plays in that series where Illinois really didn't seem to be able to stop us, including on the ground. And we
Yes.
were just, it wasn't like we were getting huge chunks every time, although we did have a couple nice, but it was a very methodical drive
Yes.
where we had drained. I mean, we got the ball at 6:19. So we had spent already, by the time we're getting to the 16-yard line, we'd already taken off more than 4 minutes, about 4.5 minutes off the clock. So now you're where you are. So here's where the way I'm thinking about this is there are various computer models, and like you can go on like ESPN Gamecast and you'll see this. Every snap of the game, they will tell you win probability. You know, your odds of winning this football game at this very moment in time as the snap's about to happen. If we drain an additional minute, just 1 minute off the clock, and then score a touchdown, our win probability probably goes from, I would say, probably around 25% if we score immediately to maybe 45%. Because remember, all Illinois needs is a field goal
Right.
after we score a touchdown. So you're looking at that win probability. That's the way I'm looking at it. You've got to look at that and say, is it Is the risk based upon the win probability, is the risk that we're not going to be able to score a touchdown after we drain the clock more greater or less than the risk that we're going to give up a field goal after we score a touchdown? Those are the two things you've got to compare the risk factors and the probabilities of each of those. Now, based upon that drive, I would say we would have been able to drain more clock and still score a touchdown. Can I guarantee we would have been able to score a touchdown? Absolutely not. But it's at least looked probable. It looked much more probable than not.
Chase,
What
hold
would,
on a second. I
yeah.
totally, by the way, totally agree with you. I'm saying, like, I don't completely blame Riley for scoring the touchdown, but what would I have done on the 16? I would have gone for a first down at the six. I would have said, let's find a way to get that. How would I
Yeah.
get that? Probably a couple of runs on the ground. That's going to make them probably call timeouts then, or they're just going to, the clock's just going to go down like under a
Yes.
minute. They're going to have to. So what probably would have happened, they'd end up with like a minute and 30 to go or something, but no timeouts. And that might have really hurt them. And we
Yeah.
probably would have scored because we were running the ball really well. If they stuff us on a run or two, you go to the pass and you score. You know, no, I would not have just thrown the ball 16 yards into the end zone. I know Lincoln Riley probably liked the matchup he had, and it did work. I mean, no one's covering our wide receivers probably. So, but still, with all that being said, then you still have to rely. Come on, can't you stop somebody once during the game?
Well, so let me broaden and finish my thought here. So,
I would have done that anyway. I would have done
yeah.
exactly. I would have
So
ran the ball.
let's say you have a certain probability you're going to be able to score a touchdown after running, you know, just run plays from 16-yard line. Now you have the question of what's your probability of stopping Illinois from scoring at least a field goal? Given that we had only stopped Illinois, essentially, I think they had punted once, and then the only other times they had not scored touchdowns for the last seven possessions were when they fumbled going in for touchdowns. I think you have to be cognizant of the fact that your
Yeah.
probability of stopping them with any amount of measurable time on the clock, even 45 seconds from getting a field goal, is very low. And here's my problem. Lincoln Riley is the head coach. He's not just the offensive coordinator, he's the head coach. And he's got to take a sober, serious look at the if he's trying to win these games. He's got to take a serious, sober look at what these two scenarios and the likelihood of both. To me, what he did by throwing that pass when he did into the end zone to Lemon, who's likely to make a big play, you know, Lemon is a great college player at this point, and he's likely to make a play on the ball and more likely than not score a touchdown, especially if it's in single coverage. When he's doing that, Riley, to me, it's almost like he was punting the responsibility for the game off to Lynn to say he's almost like, okay, Anton Lynn, you're getting paid $3.5 million a year. You stop him now. Now it's your job to win the game.
I agree.
I'm washing my hands of my duties. I've done what I need to do. You do it. And the problem is, whether it's the fault of Lynn or the staff or Lincoln Riley as the head coach, the defense is not good and they were not going to be able to stop him. Lincoln Riley should have known that, and he should have at least attempted to drain the clock or drain timeouts a little bit. And the fact that he was so blatant, it's not like, oh, he tried to run the ball once and it didn't work. He threw a ball right into the end zone right after the 2-minute timeout. I
No,
mean,
I agree. I didn't like that either. I said, like, because I don't, you know my feeling on this all the time, Chase. Why ever throw the ball ever? If I run the ball for 7 yards every play, I will never throw one pass
yeah.
in the game. Obviously, that's not going to happen. You're going to pass the ball. I love a passing offense. I was a receiver when I was younger. I love catching the ball. I love everything about high flying offenses. Lincoln, though, you're right. Lincoln does what Lincoln does. He says, my goal, I score. You give me an opening, I exploit it. And that's what he enjoys. And he is great at it, too. He is. I'm not going to ever fault his scoring or his ability to work with quarterbacks. He does it and he makes it happen, for the most part. Sometimes last year his offense did not come through, but we had newer quarterbacks who were not as good last year. Both the quarterbacks, they were not nearly as good. Miami has improved quite a bit. And then you've got this one sensational wide receiver who could play anywhere, and he's kind of unstoppable. But no, I would have run the ball, or maybe some short. The other reason I don't like to throw the ball down there, the field is very, very crowded. You're risking an interception. That's exactly what happened to Penn State when they tried to throw the ball with a million defensive backs, against Oregon, and then the game was over. And that's a
Yep.
good, they have a good quarterback on Penn State. So I don't like that either because you just never know. You might get an interception too. Running the ball guarantees that you won't get an interception. And hopefully the running backs are holding the ball at that point. And I would have run the ball somewhat, or maybe some kind of short pass play, maybe. But even then, it's tight quarters, so it's dangerous. You get down first and goal at the one. Maybe I'm going to try to trick them once or twice with a pass or something like that. So no, I would have run the. I would have. I was run. They were. That was the one point of the game. We weren't running the ball very well most of that game. We just weren't. We really, really couldn't do it very well. They were running on us pretty well. But at the end of the game, we were running the ball. It looked like they were getting tired on their defense. I mean, it's
Yeah.
hard when you're going against Lincoln. So I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying I don't completely fault him for scoring a touchdown, but I get your idea with analytics. And I didn't feel good about them having Bielema was really smart. He saved every time out. He had all day to run a 2 minute drill, plus the 2 minute timeout. Or maybe what time did they get the ball back,
Well,
Jason?
it was we had just gone through the 2 minute timeout, so we scored one with 1:55.
Okay, so no 2 minute, but he had three full
Yeah.
timeouts and an offense that had been obviously clicking throughout the game.
Yes.
And do you have any thoughts, by the way, going back to, and I know you want to finish your thought, but on like taking the ball at the beginning of the game, do you use analytics for that? I don't use analytics. What I use is I always want the ball in the second half. I don't care if I'm up, down, this or that. Some people say, well, you get the ball more often if with the averages if you take it first. But I like to go on deep. It's a psychological thing with
Yeah, no,
you.
I agree with you. I like it too. I think yesterday though, Illinois did win the toss and deferred.
I get
So
it. I get it.
yeah.
I'm just curious what your thoughts
No, I
were.
completely agree. I completely agree.
Anyway, okay. Go ahead. You were going to say
So
something else.
yeah, well, and just going to the schedule. I mean, I have to be honest, I'm looking at the schedule. Michigan at home, at Notre Dame, at Nebraska. I would have us as a underdog in all three of those games, with Notre Dame being almost an impossible task to win that game. I think of the three, I think beating Michigan is the most realistic. It's a home because it's a home game.
Yes.
I've gotten to the point where I don't think Nebraska winning in Lincoln is actually, I don't want to say possible. It's this point, I'd say it's highly improbable. And winning in Eugene is going to be close to impossible. So you have like the two highly, highly, highly improbable wins, which are at Notre Dame, at Eugene. So those are losses. And then Nebraska, at Nebraska, I think is pretty improbable, and then Michigan at home, it's closer to a 50-50 game, but I would give, because how the defense looked today, or yesterday, I would say it's like a 55-45 probability that Michigan wins that game. That's where I'm looking at right now at the schedule. As far as the other teams, then you're looking at Northwestern, Iowa, and UCLA all being played in Los Angeles. I make us the favorites in those games.
Michigan travels. They traveled well when they played Oklahoma. At least they played tough and kept the game really close. And remember, Michigan's has a great quarterback, but he's not great yet. He's a brand new guy. He's not a superstar passer yet. He is really good with his legs. He will probably be really good next year, the year after, or whenever. You might be able to do something against him. It will help definitely being at being at home for that game, plus the bye, hopefully that helps with injuries and all those other things, and you get some compounding with all that. But Michigan travels. They went to Nebraska, and Nebraska was very similar to them, by the way. They like fairly even teams, but Michigan came through more, and they were just a little bit better, a little bit more physical. Nebraska is like seeking to be Michigan at this point, and Michigan still doesn't have like an incredible passing game. I couldn't believe the game. I think they had 100 yards rushing and no, 300 yards rushing and 100 yards passing. And I don't understand, by the way, what's going on with that, with these teams that cannot pass the ball at all, why you can't flood the box a little bit more. Maybe I don't notice what Michigan's really running, but maybe it always looks like run pass option. You sort of have to respect it, but I would tell you not to respect it. because you're going to lose anyway. You cannot let Michigan just run even for over 200 yards. No, the goal is, I don't care even if we lose to Michigan. No running the ball for over 200 yards in the game. I won't let you. I won't even let you have 150 yards. You're going to have 300 yards passing. And you're not going to get 300 yards passing, although maybe against USC you would. On the road, it's going to be harder. It's also harder to pass the ball on the road. So I don't know if you have any thoughts, by the way, on that, as well as how do you stop Michigan? Even though they seem like you can beat them, but it doesn't seem like you can stop their run game.
Well, I mean, with our team too. I mean, it's just our run defense has not been good. So, I mean, on defense, you struggle to point to what has been good. It was the pass rush up until yesterday. That sometimes pass rush can work against you when you have a quarterback like Underwood, because sometimes you over pursue and you give him lanes to make plays. So. I'm not thrilled with that matchup, even though, Underwood's to, for the season, he's basically averaging, 7 yards per attempt, but like, it reminds me a little bit of Childs from, Michigan State. I think Underwood's better, but just not, not as experienced. And we struggled to actually, sack him and that was against a much weaker offensive line. So, I think this is going to be I think this is going to be a struggle against Michigan. I think they're going to have a really great game plan for us. I'm not who do they play next week? Because they were off this week. So, I got
Wisconsin, I think.
okay, and that's not really a super tough game. I think that will be a building. It's at home, and that's I think will be a building experience for Underwood. So. I'm just, it just doesn't look super great to me. Unfortunately, is where I'm at with that. So, I hate to be so pessimistic about things, but that's where I'm at I think we're going to be as the way the defense looks. I just think we're going to struggle stopping the run there. And I think that, with the times when they do need to pass, they'll probably just get enough done. It's like one of these 31-28 type games. I think we'll lose very narrowly.
Yeah, it could be. The only other thing I'd like to see from the offense from Lincoln Riley is I was really pleased with the running game against Michigan State. I'm not going to joke about this. It's the first time I've been happy with the run game ever under Lincoln Riley at USC. Even though we've had a few games where he had some good rushing stats, I still watch the games. I watch the way they're being blocked, and we get a lot of things because of some spectacular players we have. Remember, the last two running backs we had are both in the NFL. But I like the blocking in the last game, so I am pretty happy, notwithstanding some mistakes, and also you can't do anything about the injuries. We'll see. Hopefully Paige comes back, but I want to see if he can consistently rush the ball for, I mean, I use a kind of a barometer, it's not exact, of 150 yards, but I'd like to see us get 150, 200 yards against them, against pretty much every team. And I haven't seen consistency with that. I thought with Illinois, they just, they're just not that good on defense. I mean, they got really hurt, destroyed by Indiana in the previous week in every aspect. I thought, why not run the ball? Why not just go 300 yards, right? Just boom. Now, maybe the injuries, we couldn't do it because of the injuries, but I'm still not convinced it's the injuries exactly. Maybe. I mean, that's a valid excuse. You're missing two offensive linemen. Our center, though, has not had very good PFF grades from what I've seen. I don't know what the situation is with Reed. I don't even know
Reed's
if.
PFF yesterday. I mean, had been strong in those first two games of the season when he came in and played a lot of the second half. But yesterday he was worse on the offensive line.
Oh,
PFF and
wow.
actually, Killian was tops. So it was kind of a.
Ugh. And since we don't really know ever, I talked to some sources. Once every 6 weeks, I'll say like, what happened and why did this happen? But I don't know what the situation is with some of these things. I haven't talked to a lot of the people that I know lately about some of the things and why. Some of them know about the injuries. They'll tell me like, well, here's really what happened, and this guy's probably out another 6 weeks. But I don't really know as much about who's coming back. I haven't checked on it lately. It'd be nice if we get a few guys back. That will help, but it's still. You've got to be, all teams have injuries. I guarantee if you went to any team in the country, there's a few that don't, but most teams and a lot of teams have multiple injuries. I mean, it's a tough game. Everyone gets hurt. But yeah, the second half of the season, I really thought it was an interesting thing, and I liked the way building up to this, kind of like taking our time, playing a little bit better top team each time, and then finally playing what I would call as a good team, Illinois, especially when you're playing on the road. People don't understand that road versus home is many times, not always, completely different. A team will look like they should be in the Super Bowl when they're at home, and they'll look very mediocre on the road. The same exact team. Not always. Some teams are more consistent, but Illinois showed that they play well at home, and they can play like typically many teams really poorly on the road. We're going to see next week. I think Indiana actually has to travel and play at Oregon. So we'll see how good Indiana really is, but will they lose that game? I don't know, but probably because it's away at distance. So we'll see, but it is scary. Maybe Lincoln can put something together and start putting up 550 yards and get some more points. But I mean, you can't ask too much more of the offense other than a little stronger running game. And we haven't had too many fumbles and things like that and too many interceptions. So it's hard to really blame the offense too much. But I would like, the only other thing I'd like to see out of them is maybe spreading it out to a few more receivers and just, give me another 75 yards rushing per game, and then you'd be completely unstoppable. But it's kind of hard to fault the offense too much, except for the running part. I'd like to see more of that.
Just last thoughts for me. I'm going to put up a post in a bit about talking about just like how Oregon put together their roster. Obviously, they've had some big recruiting classes. They're spending a ton of money on NIL that's already been discussed about. But it's interesting when you actually dig down into the guys that are the most impactful players for Oregon, both on their offense and really their defense, because their defense is better than their offense. You have guys like Mateo, and then like DeCorian Moore, who are like these five chip recruits, five star blue chip recruits, but a lot of the guys are transfers, and a lot are four stars who are ranked outside of the top 100, some of them outside of the top 200, and they just hit on a lot of these guys, and so they've just scouted very well, really smart about it. And I'll go through that on the post I'm about to do. So, any last thoughts before we get out of here, Upper West?
Yeah, I agree with that. Watching Oregon play, and so I looked up the one safety, who made the interception. I said I never heard of him, and I forgot. I think he was at Purdue, ironically. And Purdue, all their players get taken by places like USC and Oregon. And he was a four star. He was rated as the number one safety, and he showed why he belonged on Oregon. And he helped win that, helped win them the game. That transfer, they have done really. They've been very smart with the transfer portal. Then, and maybe not quite as good as the high school recruiting, but they're getting both, obviously. And they look really strong. Will they win it all? I don't know if Oregon will win it all. Only one team can win it all, but they do look really good. USC, maybe, I went optimistic. I really tried to be optimistic about yesterday. It was hard because we were kind of getting pushed around again, which I don't like to see, but maybe we can just improve. Get a little bit better on defense, and have the week to heal up, and maybe having a couple extra players in the field will make all the difference, And then I do think, regardless, it's going to be really hard at Notre Dame and at Oregon, especially at, I mean, you said especially at Notre Dame. I'm almost going to say especially at Oregon. So you can pick your poison with that, right? One team is uber talented, and then one team, they're both, pick your poison. Yeah, you can. What, I don't know which team is better. They're playing better right now, Notre Dame too. I mean, they just went into Arkansas and scored 55. Arkansas is not great, so I don't know where it's going to be. I think I had us on the year at 9-4. Might be maybe 8-5 or 7. It could be 7-6. Can the team keep it together and get a couple of wins where you and I think like, no, they're not going to win those games? Sure, that could happen. But they've got to shore up the lines, and they definitely need to, again, Lincoln Riley needs to figure out a way for whatever he needs to do to fix the defense. Ultimately, it is his responsibility. He is the one who hired Lynn. He's the one who hired these all-star defensive coaches who he says are the best defensive coaches in the country, or at least one of them. Or, so he it's on him. He's the common denominator. He's never had a good defense, even at Oklahoma. So he's got to figure that out. I don't really think it's all those coaches. I think some of them have to be really good. They're very highly compensated. So that's where he really needs work and a little bit of work on just being more physical and working on fundamentals. Can he change that around by the end of the year? I don't know, but maybe, so I'm optimistic. Maybe some new things. Maybe he'll make some sort of semi-wholesale changes in the second half of the season and just do things a little differently. We can only hope.
Well, hopefully we'll have better results, and hopefully we'll do another podcast talking about better results. So, until then, everybody, fight on.
Right on. That was fun.